Good afternoon, Juno. Everybody listening to KTOO throughout Southeast Alaska. I'm Ken Fix, and I'm your host. It's time for another edition of the Juno Afternoon for Wednesday, July 2nd, 2014. On the show today, we're going to talk with Tom Von Kannel as he completes his Cross America bicycle ride dedicated to veterans. We'll talk with Corey Ray about the Alaska Cannabis Institute. M.K. McNaughton will be here to highlight her first Thursday show at the Jack, and we'll get a preview of Sunday's Juno Cabaret performance. All these guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more for Wednesday, July 2nd, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Coeur d'Alene tribe is celebrating a victory with a U.S. District Court ruling concerning a poker game offered at its casino. But as Steve Jackson reports, it's uncertain how the issue will be resolved with the state.
Last week, Chief Judge B. Lynn Windmill ruled that the Coeur d'Alene tribe was correct in its read of the 1992 gaming compact between it and the state of Idaho. The state had filed an injunction to stop the tribe from allowing Texas Hold'em-style poker at the Whirly Casino, but the judge ruled against that move. Tribal spokeswoman Heather Keene says with the threat of an injunction removed, the actual lawsuit filed by the state is on hold for 60 days. Although the compact allows for arbitration between the state and tribe, Keene says it's not likely the tribe will make the first move to make that happen.
It's our understanding under the gaming compact that it would be the aggrieved party who would invoke dispute resolution. And we've been looking at offering poker for a few years now. You know, we've done a lot of analysis, and we feel like we're on pretty strong legal ground. So again, it would be the aggrieved party that would invoke it. So I'm not sure that it would make sense for us to do it because we feel we have a strong legal argument to do what we're doing.
Meanwhile, the state of Idaho is disappointed with the court's ruling. Governor Butch Otter issued a statement saying, quote, "The state of Idaho remains committed to enforcing the rule of law that limits gambling in tribal casinos to clearly approved games, and poker is not one of them," unquote. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
A sign recently installed at the entrance of Wind Cave National Park came after consultation with tribal representatives dating back several years. As Jim Kent reports, the sign was updated to reflect a more accurate history involving Native Americans.
He leaned over that hole, and his hat blew right off his head.
Millions of people have visited Wind Cave National Park. Spokesperson Tom Farrell says the origins of the Southern Black Hills tourist site were pretty limited, if based on the sign that used to stand by the cave's natural entrance.
I talked about some cowboys finding this in 1881, and we wanted to reflect the fact that cowboys didn't discover it, they rediscovered it, but they didn't find it for the first time. We know that Native Americans discovered Wind Cave thousands and thousands of years ago, and it's considered sacred by them. For the Lakota people, it's considered their origin site.
At the request of Lakota tribal members in the area, the staff of Wind Cave National Park removed the old sign in 2006 and began consulting with tribal representatives to create new, more accurate signage. One of those involved in the consultation process was Lakota elder Basil Braveheart.
If you see that sign, it really is having Native American presence in terms of the sacredness of that Wind Cave.
Basil Braveheart also recorded a videotape about Wind Cave history from a Native American perspective. Braveheart's hope is that the National Park Service will use the tape to train staff in order to present a more accurate history of Wind Cave to visitors who tour the park. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent at the entrance to Wind Cave.
The Interior Department has extended the deadline for public comment on the proposed rule to take land into trust for Alaska tribes. The proposal would allow the Secretary of the Interior to consider applications in the state. Tribal leaders across Alaska have voiced their support of the rule. Written comment will be accepted through July 31st. In July 1979, Jay Silverheels had a star with his name on it placed on Hollywood's Walk of Fame in California. The Native actor played Tonto in the Lone Ranger television series. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Humboldt State University has a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program emphasizing decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted from August 1 to begin in January. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And my first guest today is Tom Von Kamel, and he's going to be talking to us about his Cross America bicycle ride dedicated to veterans. And, of course, he is a veteran himself, as am I. Tom, welcome to the studio. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Ken. It's an honor and a privilege for me to be here in Juneau.
All right. And tell us about your ride across the U.S., how many miles you've covered, when did it start?
Ken, it started on the 1st of March. I started off at Clemson, South Carolina. That was where I grew up. I went from Clemson, South Carolina down to Key West, Florida, because I wanted to go to the southernmost part of the country, and then came up the panhandle of Florida across the southern states, across the western states, hit the Pacific Ocean around Ventura, California, and turned right up the coast and came on up to Juneau. The purpose of the trip was to make sure that we raised awareness, as you said, of the sacrifices that U.S. service members and their families have made since 9/11, but we're including all U.S. Service members and their families. So it's a little over 5,800 miles, 5,805 to be exact, 120 days of cycling, self-supporting, solo.
Okay, Tom, and you're a retired U.S. serviceman.
Yes, I am. I'm retired U.S. Army. Served in the Army for 20 years from 1977 to 1997. I always say the second thing was I never served in combat. I was in the Cold War era.
As was I. Same thing.
And I think you know, we talked about it earlier, Ken. You raise your hand, you take the oath of the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and nobody knows where we're going. And what we are committed to doing is ensuring that we honor those people that have done so much for us since 9/11. And I think it probably would, you know, just to kind of give you a little bit of context, everyone asked me, why is he doing it? How old is he? How far does he cycle a day, and what does he eat? Well, I'll go to those questions very briefly. Why I'm doing it? I was cycling in the Pyrenees about 4.5 years ago in France, bicycling, and I had a freak high-impact accident that involved nobody else but myself. The bike flipped over, hit a rock, flipped over, and my left hip dislocated and acted as a battering ram and shattered my left pelvis into about 20-something pieces. They call it a seagull break because it looks like a flock of seagulls in flight. I was taken by ambulance to Lourdes Hospital, put in intensive care. I spent 2 days there. And after 2 days, the doctor said to me that they did not have the expertise or the facilities to take care of the extent of my injuries, and I needed to find a world-class trauma ward. And I always say the grace of God came in the form of a U.S. Air Force major, Major David Tatum, who arranged a medevac flight for me from Lourdes, France, to Landstuhl Regional Military Hospital in Germany. I was medevac there on the 21st of September, was there in the trauma ward for 18 days, and I was there with returning wounded and injured service members coming from Iraq and Afghanistan, and sadly a couple of those folks that did not make it. The service or the treatment that I received there saved my life. I would not, certainly wouldn't be here today, and I wouldn't be walking had I not received the expert and dedicated care that I received in that hospital.
All right, I was going to ask you if you had any specific memories of any of the service members that you encountered while you were there.
Yes, I did. The first couple of days, I was in a wheelchair the whole time, I was in the bed where I was in a wheelchair the entire time. But I remember on a couple of occasions, well, the first time I was learning to walk on crutches after the first operation, seeing service members that were receiving the same kind of treatment that I was. However, I knew that the nature of the accident or the injury was radically different than mine. And I was struck by their determination to get on with their lives and to heal. I was also struck by the devotion and attention to detail and the all-consuming care of the staff and the nurses. And this was these were Navy corpsmen, these were registered nurses, these were orderlies, and they were all of every service, a number of different nationalities, Canadian. And they were all dedicated to help people return to a normal life. I was there when, tragically, there was a crash involving a Black Hawk helicopter, and a number of service members came, and a number of them sadly didn't make it. And you could feel the pall, you could feel the extreme sadness in that ward, because they shut it down, brought them in, and did everything they could. But if there was one wish I could have, Ken, I would wish for every American citizen to walk through that ward, walk through that hospital, to see the measure of devotion that that staff has, that those hospital members have, and to show them what kind of care that we are receiving or that the veterans are receiving.
Okay, and I don't know if I want to open this can of worms, but do you want to make any commentary on what's going on with the VA hospitals throughout the nation right now?
I would only say that the CDC is an apolitical organization. We have the best military in the world. It is up to us as American citizens and our representatives, government, that we provide the best support to that military in the world. It is two sides of a coin, and whatever we can do to up our game, we can always improve. We can always make things better. But it breaks my heart to hear some of the stories that some of the veterans have told me. And the only thing I can say is that as long as we individually and as voters continue to insist on the best possible care for our veterans, that this situation will certainly improve.
All right, Tom, and how long was the recuperative process for you?
Well, I had a total of almost a year. Had two major operations. The first one did not work quite well, so they had to take the second major operation going in from the side of the hip. But unfortunately, I got MRSA, which is a superbug, unfortunately, it wasn't detected until I dropped down to about 154 pounds, and my normal weight's about 185 or 190. And so they had to do the third and the fourth operation to take out all the metal bits, which is probably in hindsight was really good. So learned to walk twice. Was in hospital for 60 days, isolation ward for 30, intensive care for 11 or 12, and then learned to walk without a cane. I guess about 9 or 10 months afterwards, got on the bike. Right after the 4th of July 2010, I remember that because I cycled 2 miles and I pulled off to the side after I cycled the 2 miles, and I wept because I knew that I was going to be okay.
All right, and let's talk a little bit about the C2C Foundation.
The C2C Foundation was founded a little over two years ago, and we tried to figure out the best way of raising the awareness of the sacrifices, and there's a number of ways to do it, but I said that if we could use cycling as kind of an attention getter, and if I was well enough to do it, it would be a great vehicle, both figuratively and literally, to partner up with other local organizations. And there's something mystical, Ken, about a bike. There's something mystical when you see one person riding it, because the first question is where he's going and how far is he, you know, where he's coming from and how far he's going. So we wanted to have some kind of a mechanism to encourage people to draw people to us. So we've had cycling events with other local organizations. I participated in the Boomer's Legacy cycling event from on Vancouver Island, which included over 100 cyclists over a 2-day period, And the purpose of the organization is to partner with these local events. We have three R's. We want to remember, we want to recognize, and we want to rejoice. We want to remember those people that made those sacrifices, the ultimate sacrifices. And there are 22 from Alaska. There are over 6,800. We want to also remember those people that have sadly taken their own lives. There's one veteran every hour, every day that kills him or herself. Over 4,100 veterans have killed themselves this year. We want to remember those people that that they've left behind. We want to remember those people with life-altering injuries, which is 35,000. We want to remember those people with injuries from Iraq and Afghanistan, which is 58,000. We want to remember those 2.5 million veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, which is 2.5 million. We want to remember those 25 million veterans from World War II onwards that served our country. So we want to do that. First R is remember. The second is to recognize those local organizations that do so much with so little, and they work out of a labor of love. And I've seen it in every state. It's incredible, Ken. I can't find the words to tell you the admiration I have for some people that are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old volunteering to try and help veterans integrate, reintegrate with the local communities. Because when we look at it, I think all help has got to be local. We talk about three things: time, talent, and treasure. Anybody can give their money, but the thing that's more valuable than money is time and your talent. And when you have a local outreach program at communities, we find out that that has the best way of having this kind of successful outcomes for veterans. So that's the second bit, is to recognize, and third is to rejoice. Because I've had the privilege of being over 60 countries in the world, and there is no country like the United States. It is, and I would argue, in my opinion, it's the greatest country in the world, and it's because of the Americans. The nicest thing, I've said the three most wonderful things I've ever heard is the sound of my son when he was born, when he cried for the first time. Someone telling me that loves me that they've loved me, and then the third sound is having that Air Force pilot saying to me in Lourdes, France, "Sir, we got you. You're going to be okay." And it's not the accent. It's not whether it's a Spanish American or Asian American or indigenous accent or Southern or Northern accent. It's the attitude behind the word. It's that attitude of I'm an American. I'm going to take care of you. So those are the three things that we're working on for our organization.
Well, Tom, how long has the ride been, and how many days were you on the road?
The ride has been 120 days from the first of March to the 29th of June. So I've ridden 5,805 miles. I'm 59 years old. I need to answer the two other questions. And the two other questions is, how far do I ride a normal day? I've ridden between 50 and 70 miles a day. The longest day was 114 miles in one day. And then the final thing that everybody wants to know is, what does he eat? On this trip, I ate everything frequently. So
you got to keep your energy up somehow.
Yeah, so nothing was off limits. So I've lost about 25 pounds. So.
All right, and please tell us about the ceremony that's going to place on Thursday at the Capitol Building.
The ceremony tomorrow is the most important ceremony for the trip. In every state, we have had a memorial ceremony that recognized those people that died from each state. And it ranged from, in South Carolina, 96 to 596 in Texas to 723 in California. The ceremony that we have tomorrow is honoring those 22 Alaskans that gave their lives for us in Afghanistan and Iraq. However, we are going to be displaying all the names of all those people, 6,800 casualties, in the Belts Committee Room. Each card, we've got 6,800 cards. Each card has that person's name, his or her rank, how old they were when they died, where they came from, and the date that they died. It's an incredibly moving ceremony. We will also have 4,100 cards blue cards. Each card will represent a suicide that occurred this since the first of January. So the ceremony is at 2 o'clock. However, we're going to be putting out the cards, and I'll be there from 12:30 onwards. I'd love to talk to people, listen to what they've got to say, because that's where I get the biggest fulfillment and enjoyment out of this ride. It's what the ride is all about.
All right, Tom, and one more plug for the website for anybody who's listening and would like to look at it and have more information.
The website is www.c2c.org. That is S-E-A, like in the ocean, the number 2, and then S-E-A, like the ocean, .org. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
All right, Tom Von Kanel, thank you very much for being our first guest today. And from one veteran to another, thanks again for all that you've done.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you for your service.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
Bicycle Race. It's 3:23 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. My next guest is Corey Ray, and he's going to be talking about the Alaska Cannabis Institute. Hi, Corey. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And can you tell me a little bit about how people are possibly able to profit from the legislation of marijuana in the state, which is coming up here this August?
Sure. So the vote's actually been pushed back to November, so it's November 4th now. And
Along with the general election stuff, okay.
Correct, yeah, because the session went over, it's 120 days, so it got pushed back to the general election. But so essentially what we're doing is we're preparing folks to operate legitimate businesses, be compliant with state and federal laws, and do it all above board. So we've got lawyers, accountants, and dispensary owners in town describing the climate and the situation to people who want to own businesses. And these are people who want to potentially grow marijuana, sell cannabis, but it's not just that. It's, you know, other people too who say they want to market, or bakeries who want to bake edibles. You have processors and distributors, so delivery services. You have waste management. You have surveillance. A lot of different industries are going to be involved within the cannabis space to help these businesses become compliant. So there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of different folks.
Okay, and there is a slogan that says that they're going to be monitoring everything from seed to sale. What was that all entailing?
So in Colorado, as well as in Washington, and then the initiative here in Alaska, they're requiring that the marijuana be tracked from seed to sale. And what that means is getting it maybe a unique number. So once the farmer puts the seed into the ground, it's got essentially a DNA, if you will, kind of a unique number identifying what that strand is and where it's going to go for its life. So when that farmer harvests and moves it on to the retailer, it's still moving along with that same unique identifier number. It goes into the retailer system with that same number, and when that retailer sells it to the end user, it's going out with that retail number as well, with that unique number. So it's important to track the marijuana from seed to sale so that we know where it's going and it's not getting into the hands of children.
All right, Corey. And your organization is counseling people on how they can profit from this. What kind of profits are they potentially looking at?
Well, our view market research, says that this is a $2.57 billion in sales in 2014. So, Colorado, they've, in the first, 6 months, I think they had $10.9 million in tax revenues. So it's a pretty big industry. And here in Alaska, I suspect it, bringing it on board, there's going to be some serious revenues. In terms of the dollar amount, in Alaska, I'm not sure. It's hard to put a number on, but you've got folks from, like I said, from growers to retailers to security folks, bakeries, marketing firms. You've got consultants, accountants, lawyers. Pretty much every single industry that exists will have a say and have a role within this new cannabis industry.
Well, Corey, I'm sure you've been monitoring what's been going on in Colorado. What percentage does it look like that's coming in actually goes to the state at this point?
In terms of a percentage, I'm not sure. I've seen numbers. $10.9 million is the number that I've seen in terms of the first 6 months of tax revenue that came to the state. I saw nearly $2 million of that went to the schools. So there is revenue being generated through the sale and distribution of, sale of medical cannabis, but also recreational cannabis.
Okay, I know that the current Alaska laws that were established in November of 98 legalized medicinal marijuana for use, but this is going to be for recreational use if it passes the ballot in November, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and how active are you in the initiative for to legalize it for recreational use?
I'm not involved with the campaign. Obviously, I would like to see the vote pass and marijuana be regulated like alcohol. Insofar as I think it's important, people go and vote in November and let their voices be heard. I think it's more of a individual rights issue than it is, cannabis or, non-cannabis. I believe, as do a lot of Alaskans, that I know what's best for myself. I know what's best for my family. I don't need the government telling me what I can and cannot do. So I really encourage people to go to the polls in November and vote. But in terms of my involvement with the campaign, I don't have any. We do have, the Alaska Cannabis Institute, and we do seminars, and we always encourage the campaign to be involved in our seminars and, get the word out about the vote and sign people up. But insofar as, you know, working with the campaign, I'm not involved with the campaign.
All right, Corey. And where would somebody go if they wanted to find out more information about your organization?
Yeah, folks can check us out at Alaska Cannabis Institute, all spelled out, alaskacannabisinstitute.com. They can find out, they can get bios on the speakers who are going to be presenting. We're adding people every day to the program, so you know, I would say check back, you know, weekly if to see the new speakers or sign up for updates, because we do release information through our email list as well. So alaskacannabisinstitute.com.
All right. Corey Ray, thank you very much for being our guest on Juno Afternoon today.
Appreciate it. Talk to you soon, Ken.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 2nd of July, 2014. It was on this day, 1679, Daniel Gracelin, Sieur de Lute, first reached Lake Superior, about where the city is that bears his name, Duluth. French soldier, explorer, he came to try to broker a peace agreement between the Sioux and the Ojibwe Indians so that the French could resume their fur trading there. And he did negotiate a peace treaty. He arranged some intertribal marriages and then headed west to explore the Mississippi and the St. Croix. 1698 on this day, the British engineer Thomas Savery patented the first steam engine. He was trying to find a way to pump water out of coal mines and eventually built this machine that itself was filled with water. When steam was introduced under pressure, the water level rose. It created a vacuum that would draw more water up through the valve below. It was Thomas Savery who came up with the term horsepower. It was on this day, 1937, Amelia Earhart was last heard from somewhere over the Pacific. She and her navigator, Fred Noonan, had set off in May from Miami to fly around the world in a Lockheed Electra. They'd completed all but about 7,000 miles of the trip, landed in New Guinea. There were U.S. Coast Guard ships in place to help guide them to their next stop, the tiny Howland Island. Weather cloudy, rainy when they left New Guinea. Earhart communicated to the Coast Guard cutter Itasca, "We must be on you, but we cannot see you. Fuel is running low. Been unable to reach you by radio. We're flying at 1,000 feet. Her last transmission about an hour later was, "We are running north and south." It's the birthday of Hermann Hesse, born in Calf, Germany, 1877. When he was in his 30s, he started studying Eastern religions, took a trip to India, and wrote his novel Siddhartha about the early life of the Gautama Buddha. Hermann Hesse, who said, "The world is not imperfect or slowly evolving along a path to perfection. No, it is perfect at every moment. Every sin already carries grace in it." It's the birthday of singer-songwriter Greg Brown, born in Fairfield, Iowa, 1949. His father was a Pentecostal preacher, his mother an English teacher who played electric guitar. Greg Brown has recorded 24 albums, including Songs of Innocence and Experience, poems by William Blake set to music. Here's a poem for today by Ted Kooser, "In the Corners of Fields." Something is calling to me from the corners of fields where the leftover fence wire suns its loose coils and stones thrown out of the furrow sleep in warm litters, where the gray faces of old no hunting signs mutter into the wind and dry horse tanks spout fountains of sunflowers, where a moth flutters in from the pasture, harried by sparrows, and alights on a post, so sure of its life that it peacefully opens its wings. Ted Kooser's poem, In the Corners of Fields, from Flying at Night, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
The second annual Cufflinks and Pearls fundraising gala is back. Join Ha'ani July 26th at 6 p.m. in the Jordan Creek Center for A Night in Monte Carlo. Hosted by Marty Duncan, celebrity chef from the Next Food Network star. Catering by Salt and Suwana Thai Cafe. And fun with casino games, live music, performing arts acts, and more. Tickets available at 586-9251. Brought to you by the Ha'ani Community Development Fund.
3:35 p.m. here in Juneau. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host on the Juneau Afternoon. My next guest in the studio is M.K. McNaughton, and she's here to highlight her first Thursday show at the Jack. M.K., welcome. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your show. You told me that it was just being finished being hung over there at the Jack for exhibition.
I just hung it. It's great. And walked across the street, and I am... When I found out I had been assigned July for the gallery, I was thinking about independence, and I decided to kind of go an opposite direction and host a theme around friendship, because I've lived in Juneau for 25 years now, and my friends and the community here are really what have made this my home. So this is a tribute to my friends, and I asked them to send me little prompts to represent our friendship images, and people sent me a whole diverse, quirky array of images that I painted.
Okay, and are your paintings mostly of landscapes, or are they still life, or what do you tend to favor?
It's a funny mix, this show. I wanted to paint a whole bunch of little paintings that would be nice souvenirs for people visiting if they wanted to take something home. The show's kind of personal in that it's prompts that people gave me that represent our friendship, but I think they're universal too. So I thought maybe they would be great tourist souvenirs. But then when I had painted about 30 little paintings, I thought, I need some big things to make this show look better. And I love landscapes. So I painted 4 landscapes. And I was having fun with some birds that were talking to each other. So they turned into large paintings. Birds having conversations, friends.
All right.
Yeah.
Tending to represent the friendships that you have in the real world.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, and I noticed that you do have your own studio here in Juneau.
I do. Great little magic spot downtown.
All right, and you do have some upcoming courses that you're going to be offering.
I do. Thanks for asking. I teach...
You want the little sheet back that's got them all,
sure,
the dates and everything so
remember.
Everybody else can hear?
I'm teaching on Mondays in September and October, and I'll offer a 4-week kids class in September and a 4-week kids class in October. The kids classes are drawing and painting for the first month and mixed media for the second month. And then I'm going to offer an adult oil painting class that will be 8 weeks long, spans the 2 months, also on Monday nights. And then I also love offering art catering, whether it's a group of friends getting together after the kids go to bed to do an art project in caustic painting. One group hired me. They had red wine and chocolate. They supplied that. I supplied the art materials. Another group hired me to do a brunch, and we did some basket weaving out of old chopped up books, showed them how to weave them into baskets. So I love making up group projects that are not intimidating and can be done in a couple of hours, and I call it art catering.
All right, and your show that's being done here at the Jack is theme of it is all friendship. How many paintings are in the gallery right now?
There are about 45 paintings, a lot of little ones, And I also have some prints. I've made some giclée prints of some of my paintings, so they're smaller and easy to frame. And I have cards, little tiny paintings on easels as well. And this show is sponsored by Patricia Hull. She's a local artist who made a contribution to sponsor an artist in the gallery, and she picks this show. I'm lucky to have her as a sponsor. And because of that, there's great food by Rockwell at the reception from 4:30 to 7
tomorrow. Oh, I like the Rockwell. That's a good
place. Yeah, there are two long tables set up in the middle ready for the food for 4:30 to 7. So I think first I thought maybe it would be funny to have a show on the 3rd of July, but I think it's a great start to the night downtown.
Yeah, so you can come by and attend the opening before the fireworks festivities kick off. That's way before the fireworks, because that's not till like 11 o'clock or later.
Well, I had a burger at the stand today. It really is the best burger in town. It's great. So there's food, there's music at the Jack, and after the opening, and so I hope people come.
All right, MK, and if somebody sees something that they like and just can't get away from when they're attending the opening, are your paintings available for purchase?
Oh, they are, definitely. The Jack gets a percentage, so your purchase supports the arts in general in Juneau. And usually the show is up for a month, so you don't have to carry it with you if you're going out to party for the night. Just put a red dot on it, and you can
buy it
through the Jack. Yeah, but I did actually make these paintings small so that if tourists were in town and they wanted to take them with them, they could. So I love to sell my work.
It's going to be real interesting if the whole thing disappears and there's nothing.
I would be
thrilled. It's a bunch of hooks and some wire, like something out of The Grinch That Stole Christmas.
I'll just paint some more and stick it up quickly.
Yeah, okay.
Good problem.
I'll just keep the show going with new, fresh paintings.
Yeah.
All right. Well, MK, and how can anybody get a hold of you if they want to take one of your courses or they need a little bit more information?
Thanks for asking. They can. You can Google me, MK MacNaughton. It's MAC. So mkmacnaughton.com. I have a website with the class info on it, and I'm on Facebook. And my number and email are on my website, too. So mkmacnaughton.com.
All right, MK, thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today.
Thanks.
Now I'm going to run a song here from it's our sister station here. It's KXLL. They are having the 5th annual Fish Fest, which is a fundraiser for them. This is going to take place tomorrow night. It starts at 9 p.m. It's going to continue after the fireworks. They do have a live band coming on. It's called The Business. They're a New Orleans soul and funk act, and I'm going to play one of their songs. I did one yesterday, but I'm going to play the other one today. This one is called Hold It Down by The Business. Enjoy.
diamond is one of the most precious gems on Earth, its facets reflecting the colors of the rainbow. And just like a diamond, KRNN is a multifaceted jewel reflecting the colors of our community in the form of music. From classical to folk, jazz to rock, world music to the blues, KRNN is the epitome of eclecticity. If you'd prefer a roadmap, check out our website at krnn.org for a detailed look at our program schedule, and tune in to 102.7 FM. You'll be glad you did.
This is Bird Note.
We found an American kestrel, a black-capped chickadee, ruby crowned kinglet, and an American goldfinch.
How did our young birdwatcher make her discoveries? Well, she went on a scavenger hunt created by educators at North Central Audubon in Washington State. In this hunt, called What's That Bird?, kids and adults look for 8 carved lifelike birds that have been planted in vegetation where the birds would normally hang out. Chapter President Mark Oswood says,
"The amazing thing is the bulk of the really young kids find mostly all 8 of them. Sometimes it's the very youngest ones that the parents will be going, yeah, well, we've got other things to do, let's go. And it's the very youngest kids that will be going, no, I'm going to find all 8 of these. And our hope, of course, is that for some fraction of them, that the birding part of it really sort of catches a little bit. There's a hook in there, and they'll come back and go, where does this bird actually live? And, you know, how would I know it if I saw it? And what's its call sound like? And what's it eat? That there's this ripple effect that somewhere 15 or 20 years from now, this kid might turn out to be a graduate student doing groundbreaking work in ornithology, and maybe, just maybe, it started there."
Plant the seed for curiosity about birds and nature.
Is that a thrush?
No, cedar waxwing.
A cedar waxwing?
Yeah, because it has a little red
thing on its wing. Yeah.
Find the Audubon chapter near you and take your family on an adventure. Begin at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
.348 as the Juno afternoon continues, and my next guests are on the phone with me. I don't know how many of them there are, but these are representatives from the Juno Cabaret, and we're going to talk to them now. Hi, who am I talking to?
Hi, it's Laura Haywood, and I'm afraid there's only one of me.
Okay, so well, one of you can speak for all of you then.
Correct.
All right. Well, correct. Nice to meet you, Laura. And tell us about the show that's coming up this Sunday.
We do. We have a show at 7 p.m. Sunday night at Rockwell. We have 13 or 14 singers. And Juno Cabaret is sort of an informal setting, and some wonderful singers who love to perform sign up and do a couple of songs. We have several accompanists. And it's just a great opportunity for people to hear, you know, wonderful old songs, mostly old songs, not all. But it's just a really fun evening. There's food and drink that you can buy at Rockwell. It's upstairs in the ballroom. I can tell you the names of the singers this time around if you're interested.
Sure, Laura, go ahead.
Okay, well, we've got Becky Bear, Jack Brandt, Larry Cooper, Elizabeth Eakins, John Haywood, Ronnie Jackson Bear, Emily McDaniel, Jocelyn Miles, Bobby Mitchell, Heather Mitchell, no relation, Terella Perry, Celissa Thole, and Dan Wayne. And if you know any of these people, you know that they're so different from each other. We have Dan Wayne, who's more of an opera singer, but loves to get up there and do standards. We have John Haywood, who's mostly a big-time jazz singer. That's his favorite thing to do. And Ronnie is great with the rhythm and blues and that sort of thing. And we have a bunch of different accompanists, and we've got some new ones this time. As usual, our main accompanist who has been with us throughout Juno Cabaret's history is Tom Loker. But in addition, we have Doug Badia, Jackie Farnsworth, Beverly Haywood, and Miranda Mendoza on piano, and we have David Shakely on drums. So it's a big night with a lot of entertainment.
All right, Laura, and remind everybody where and when this takes place.
It's at Rockwell, you know, on Franklin Street, upstairs in the ballroom at 7 p.m. And people should come hungry because they have a great menu at Rockwell, and you can order right off the menu. And there's a full bar upstairs.
Right, and it's Sunday, this coming Sunday, July 6th.
This coming Sunday, right. So people should be kind of over the whole 4th of July thing and just looking for some other kind of entertainment.
Well, some people will be over it, others will not. But we'll just see, but thank you very much for being our guest on the Juno Afternoon today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Laura.
All right, bye.
Bye. Okay, and now we've got one of these little Peter Griffin stories that I'm going to throw in here. This one's called Till Death Do Us Part, and it's off his spoken word CD called The Skunk Whisperer.
I was in Phoenix several years ago, riding on a shuttle bus between the hotel and the airport, when something caught my eye. A billboard. Now, I'm not a big fan of billboards, but this one caused me to sit up and take notice. It had those universal male and female symbols, you know the ones, a circle with an arrow for a male, a circle with a cross for a female. They're astrological signs for Mars and Venus, and there was a jagged red lightning bolt dividing the two. It was an advertisement for an internet company specializing in divorce, and you could get one for the low, low price of $395. Oh my goodness, I thought, is there anything you can't get on the internet? But that billboard got me to thinking. There are a number of wildlife species that are known to mate for life, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, till death do they part. People usually think of geese and swans. Wolves might come to mind as well, although the alpha male and alpha female pair up through competition with other wolves in the pack. Their status as the one mated pair in the pack can change depending on circumstances. I tend to think of wolves as having an arrangement, like a marriage of convenience that lasts only as long as both parties agree it's to their advantage to remain together. Bald eagles, on the other hand, do mate for life, returning to their territory every year to start over. In late winter, each pair initiates a courtship ritual that begins the mating season. The two of them do a complex aerial dance, circling high in the sky and then plunging earthward, tumbling, locking claws with each other, swooping and circling, tumbling together again until they pull out, usually but not always, well above the ground. They select one of the nests in their territory and remodel it with new sticks. Back east, we saw that the male often brought the female a fresh evergreen bough while she was on the nest. Now I suppose the romantics among us might say that that's the eagle equivalent of flowers or a heart-shaped box of chocolate candy. Nobody ever figured out exactly what the green branch was for, and maybe we really don't need to know in order to appreciate eagles. I remember watching a pair of eagles early in my Forest Service career as a wildlife biologist in Michigan. It was the only pair of eagles in my district of 150,000 acres. We'd begun monitoring the nest in the early 1960s, and up through the late 1970s, the pair had failed to produce young. Most of the time, there was no egg in the nest. The few times we did see an egg, it was crushed beneath the weight of the adult, the effects of an environment laced with lingering traces of DDT and other chemicals. But in the 1980s, that changed. One year there was an egg, and it remained unbroken for the whole incubation period. We watched closely, but from a distance, until finally it hatched, a beautiful young eaglet. It was carefully tended by the adults until the young bird fledged and left the nest. So what had happened? Had these eagles finally rid themselves of the accumulations of pesticides in their systems? Well, no. We came to realize that one of the eagles was a new mate. How did we know? Well, one of the birds wore a shiny aluminum leg band, and somewhere along the line, the original female of the pair died during the winter. till death do us part. The surviving male hadn't pined away. It found a new mate, a female that was likely banded as a nestling. She had come of age in a world with fewer pesticides in the food chain, and as a result, could lay healthy eggs. When we endow wild creatures with human emotions, it's called anthropomorphism. As a wildlife biologist, I learned that it isn't good to do that. Under the cold, clinical eye of science, everything wild animals do is because of a basic need to survive and pass along their genes to a new generation. They don't experience gratitude, hatred, or love. I know that is a matter of science. But I can't help feeling that human beings might benefit from a look at the eagle and the rituals each pair goes through every spring to renew their lifelong bonds, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, till death do us part.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Kenny Lake School students tell the story of the 197-mile Copper River and Northwestern Railway in their documentary Iron Rails. Iron Rails Unwrapped, the raft trip, follows at 9:30 with a peek into the student filmmaker's exciting field research. The Miller Center Forum looks at the legacy of the 1964 Civil Rights Act at 10, more powerful than an army. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
3:57 p.m. here on KTOO in Juneau, 104.3. And I've got a public service announcement to read for you. Most of you people are probably familiar with this. Gastineau Humane Society would like to remind Juneau pet owners that fireworks scare pets. Most of them are scared witless by those noises. More pets are lost on the 4th of July than on any other day of the year. Please keep your pets safely indoors this holiday weekend. Keep your pets in a safe, escape-proof location. For some of these pets, that's going to be tough because they'd like to get out no matter what. During the fireworks, leave a TV or a radio on to cover the frightening noises and provide plenty of fresh water for your pet. Keep your pet's license and identification tag on its collar so that it can be returned home as quickly as possible if your pet gets lost. If your pet is lost or if you find a lost pet, please go to ghspets.org or fill out a missing pet report and contact Animal Control at 789-6997. Hey, these pets are relying on you. You're responsible for them. They are not smart enough to figure everything out. Tonight's forecast is mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers, lows in the low 50s. Tomorrow, rain is likely in the morning with scattered showers in the afternoon, highs around 64. Southwest winds at 10 miles an hour in the morning, becoming light and variable. And this is KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on the following translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay areas, you can tune into K276 AF 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can get us on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard on 872. KXLL can be found on 873. And tonight on KRNN, I'm going to be running part of my show with the oldies, Ken and Colleen, America the Beautiful, From States to Cities and Highways, Sea to Shining Sea. We're honoring historical events, pop culture of the 60s and 70s with our nation in songs. So that's something you can look forward to starting at 5:06 p.m. on KRNN 102.7. Tomorrow, Shauna Strasser will be your host. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host for a Juneau afternoon these last 2 days, and I will see you this next Tuesday. All Things Considered is coming right up.